Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. O King, after being thus informed by the demigods, the most powerful Lord Brahma, accompanied by Bhrigu, Daksha and other great sages, immediately started for the place where Hiranyakashipu was performing his penance and his austerities. Purport. Lord Brahma was waiting for the austerities performed by Hiranyakashipu to mature so that he could go there and offer benedictions according to Hiranyakashipu's desire. Now, taking the opportunity of being accompanied by all the demigods and great saintly persons, Brahma went there to award him the benediction he desired. Interesting point here. A few points. He went to that place where Hiranyakashipu was performing his austerity. It says he didn't go earlier. He was waiting. He was waiting for his austerities to mature. Even though he knew he was a demon, in one sense you could understand, you may not have known the detail, but you could understand what type of result would this demon be desiring from such austerities. He's not going to ask for a benediction, you know, may there be peace in the universe and may all living entities become godly and free of envy, or something like that. Highly unlikely. This is a prayer of Prahlad Maharaj, but it's not the prayer of Hiranyakashipu. Rather, the prayer of Hiranyakashipu, or the desire of Hiranyakashipu, was not unknown to others. He'd already proclaimed his purpose after the demise of his own brother, Hiranyaksha, that he was going to take revenge on the demigods and on Vishnu. So it wasn't unknown that he would more than likely ask for some horrific boon which would bring terror to the universe. So we could say Brahma could have easily thwarted the potential of this. He could have gone earlier when the austerities were not mature. Many things. It's interesting, Lord Brahma, of course he has a post. You know, when you're taking a position, just like you may be temple president or whatever you call it, you may be temple commander. And when you take that position, you have to act in a particular role. You're still yourself, no doubt, but one has to act according to the position also. If you're the temple commander and someone comes up, Prabhu, is there someone can wash the pots? And they say, well, that's not my job. You know, I don't do things like ask people to do service. You're probably in the wrong service. Probably not very good that you're the temple commander. Or if you're the head pujari and someone says, Prabhu, there's no one come to dress the deities this morning. Well, that's someone else's problem. Don't ask me, I'm just the head pujari. You're probably in the wrong situation, or you've got the wrong understanding. So when you take a position, you have to act more or less according to that position. Sometimes even against one's own nature, against one's own desire even, because you have a responsibility to play. Arjuna, for instance, he had a responsibility. He was a kshatriya, a warrior. He didn't want to fight on the battle of Kurukshetra, but it was his duty to do so. He had to do it against, because it, of course in his case it was Krishna's will. Now in the case of Brahma also, he has his duty to perform. Now, whichever way we look at it, there are many Brahmas, so let's look at it from one angle of vision. For instance, Lord Brahma, when he was, most of you probably know the Brahma Vimohana Lila, when Lord Brahma attempted to steal away the cows and the cows, the coward boys, from the bank of the Jamuna when they were having a very nice picnic. They're having a nice picnic. And, you know, sometimes out of envy when you see people having a good time, when you see them, you know, enjoying themselves. Of course, the Agasura demon has just been killed, and it's quite amazing the demigods are watching these pastimes going on. And how is this? A little coward boy is easily destroying and killing these demons who even we're scared of, even we cannot overcome. Who is this? So Brahma, because he's most powerful of the demigods, he tested the opulences of Krishna. Now, there's one other ways. We look at it from one side to see that he became proud. He wanted to show off his own opulences in the presence of Krishna, as if he thought he was greater. And he thought, now I'll teach this cowherd boy a bit about, you know, potency, and see what happens. So he came, and as you know, he attempted to steal away the calves, and then the cowherd boys. Krishna allowed this to happen. He had a wonderful purpose behind all of this. If you go back a little further in the mentality of Brahma, one finds that Brahma was there was a prior mentality, and prior mentality of Brahma was that now I should do something to show that my Lord is beyond a doubt the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not me, Lord Shiva, or anyone else. He was thinking like that. So let me think what I can do to achieve this purpose. So this was a prior mentality. Then, of course, we hear about his becoming, you can say, bewildered by his own potencies, illusion, whatever you want to call it, and overwhelmed by what appears to be incredible pride. So then he attempted to steal away the calves and the cows. His efforts were actually complete failure, not only from the point of view of what Krishna did as a result of this pastime. As you know, he expanded himself into innumerable identical forms of the calves and the cowherd boys, so that nobody, even Lord Brahma, could not recognize for a long time that there was anything had happened at all. And Brahma, of course, left the scene for a moment in his life, which is a year in earthly years. And during that time, he thought that he'd captured all the calves and the cowherd boys and locked them up in caves. Actually, he did not. The truth of the matter is he did not touch either calves or cowherd boys. Krishna's Maya potency personally expanded, also identical forms of those calves and cowherd boys, and those were the ones, they were Mayic forms, who were taken away by Brahma and put in the caves. They were not real. They were not real. So he thought they were real. This is how Krishna works. And Krishna then expanded himself into identical calves and cowherd boys to satisfy the longings of the residents of Raj or Vrindavan, because they very much desired to have Krishna as their son. So Krishna completely fulfilled their desire. He fulfilled Brahma's desire also to show that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in the role of Brahma also to display his Aishvarya forms. Because when Brahma returned after 1 year, of course, and he saw that it seemed like nothing had happened at all, he became completely astonished. So then Krishna transformed those forms, he manifested himself as four-armed forms of Narayan. All those calves and cowherd boys transformed or manifested as four-armed forms, completely satisfying, as a position of Brahma, the mentality of Aishwarya Bhava, or the desire to see the great opulence manifestation. So his desires were fulfilled also by this pastime, and the cowherd boys' desires were, poor old cowherd boys, what happened to them? They kind of went into nowhere, they just disappeared off the face of the earth. They were neither in the caves nor were they at home. Where were they? Well, they were deep inside the forest of Raj, enjoying constantly day and night the pastimes with Krishna, cowherd boy pastimes. So everybody was completely satisfied. This is how Krishna works through his representatives. They may or may not know how it's going on, but Krishna has a plan. So through Lord Brahma, he has this amazing plan, and you can say, why on earth did Brahma grant these boons? And later on we see Krishna even chastising him, or Lord Nrsingadev chastising him practically for doing it. But at the same time, it was the arrangement of the Lord that these boons should be granted. So this incredible pastime of Lord, the appearance of Lord Nrsingadev and so on would take place. And we, of course, for eternity, really, one has the opportunity to hear these amazing pastimes of Lord Nrsingadev and Prahlad Maharaj. Otherwise, the whole thing would not, you know, they're very, sometimes you see, even in the case of Ravana and others, when Lord Ramchandra, for instance, when he was exiled from Ayodhya, Lord Brahma was thinking, now, okay, this is very good, because now I know that the Lord plan is about to unfold. that this Rakshasa demon will be killed very shortly. You know, they can. There's other plans. We may not see it on our with our limited perception, but there are so many other things going on. Nothing happens without the will of the Lord. Everything is being orchestrated to bring us to this point of depending upon Krishna, becoming completely dependent upon the will of the Lord. His will predominates in every situation in one sense. He allows our free will, you can say. But still, he has his free will. So he makes plans and arrangements so that behind the scenes, ultimately, it gives the opportunity for the soul to advance out of his apparent separation from Krishna. So the Lord Brahma is like an instrument, you can say. You can look at it in different ways. We can learn from the example, of course, not to try to take on the mentality of Lord Brahma. It's a disaster, in one sense, or Lord Indra. But on the other hand, one can see that they are instruments and they play roles. Sometimes they play the role of demons, just like we take Duryodhana, for instance, Hiranyakashipu himself. Most of you probably are aware, maybe you've already read it, that Hiranyakashipu in his previous life was none other than one of the personal gatekeepers of Lord Narayan, Jai, or Vijay, whichever it is. He was one of the personal gatekeepers. And by the arrangement of the Lord, through the agency of the four Kumaras, they were cursed to take birth as demons for the fulfillment of the Lord's pleasure, or his pastimes. Nothing is going on by chance. Even Duryodhana, you know, we sometimes hear he's an expansion of Kali Yuga and this and that, which is also there. And even Kali. All these various personalities are not just some, you know, ambitious karmi who happened to kind of climb up the ladder and, you know, take such a relevant role that they're immortalized in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, some ordinary Tom, Dick, or Harry, some ordinary Prime Minister of the United Kingdom or something like that, who the new Prime Minister is now. Did you all vote yesterday? Vote for the Green Party. A candidate, a devotee, someone told me a devotee was standing on the Green Party, is that right? Arjuna. Arjuna Krishna is an old devotee. I don't know if it's him. Old devotee, book district. Anyway, it's irrelevant. It's insignificant. What they do is not going to be found in the pages of Bhagavatam. Even if it's completely irrelevant. It's insignificant. It's like, you know, a bunch of ants electing the next, you know, king of the ants or something. It makes no difference. They're still ants, still a bunch of ants. You know, even if you, there's a nice sign, I remember seeing this sign on the back of a bus in New Zealand one time. It said, you know, they call it the rat race, is that right? You have this term, the rat race? It said, even if you win the rat race, you're still a rat. And they still remain rats, you know, even if they get the position of prime minister, whatever they call it these days. They're still just as much a, you know, nonsense as anyone else. I don't know what the hell they're doing. But anyway, sometimes this is not like the Bhagavatam. This is a different thing. They're playing parts. So Prabhupada, one time he was asked this question by Hari Surya, asked Prabhupada, he said, Srila Prabhupada, how is it, you know the past time when Krishna, Mother Arjuna came to Dwarka and actually, you could say, really misbehaved in one sense. He disguised himself as a sannyasi and was, flirting at the same time with Subhadra. You know, it was like disgusting. You can imagine a sannyasi doing this. I mean, it's not a new thing. It was going on then too. He wasn't a real sannyasi, but I guess if you have that mentality, you're not one either. So anyway, his purpose was to capture the hand of Subhadra. You know, he was a sannyasi, so Balaram was entertaining him as a sannyasi and receiving him and respecting him. And then there was some function or another, Subhadra came and Arjuna couldn't keep his eyes off her, and she also fell in love with Arjuna. And they were like, hearts were bound. So, and anyway, this pastime, how Arjuna tried to, or did, kidnap Subhadra, and how Balaram became furious. He wanted to kill him. Why? Because he had intention, not only because he cheated, but he had the intention of marrying Subhadra to Duryodhana. He was an archdemon, practically, number one, in one sense. So, but why is he doing that? Maharishi Swami said, Prabhupada, it seems to me, and the same thing on the Battle of Kurukshetra, when Bhima and Duryodhana, Balaram was not at all pleased with Bhima's behavior. He wouldn't even come to the battle because of the situation. He wanted to be a witness of Duryodhana's demise. So he was very upset with Bhima and Arjuna like this. So now he wonders why. So he asked Prabhupada said, Duryodhana, he's a devotee. He's a devotee. He's just playing the role of a demon. That was Prabhupada's answer. They play roles. Some. It's not necessarily all, but certain personalities we find in the Bhagavatam are playing roles. And we should understand the purpose behind it and the lesson that we have to learn to help us, because we're also playing a role, but we're in ignorance. The whole material world is, we call it Maya. It's very interesting, actually. Some of you, what do you call them? Bhaktivedanta players, is that what we're called? No, Vaikuntha players, that's New York. Whatever it is. Yeah, Bhaktivedanta players. Here's Jai Krishna there. Look, we've done some dramas together, haven't we, Jai Krishna? Yes, Hare Krishna. So the Bhaktivedanta players are there. And it's a very interesting thing, you know. When you're acting in drama, now one of the first premises in acting, I mean there may be a few, but for me the first premise anyway has always been this one, is that the first thing you have to practically do in your meditation, at least, is acting is a deep, deep meditation. It's not just learning some lines and behaving like an idiot or like a machine. And sometimes the actors are like blooming machines. But it's a very deep meditation, acting. So what's the first thing you have to... What's the premise? I've given a clue. You take a role. Go a little further. What's that mean? You roll on the ground or something? You take a roll on the ground? That may be part of your role, but a little bit further. Yes, you get into the mood and take it a little bit, expand on that a little bit more. Yes. Live like what? Yeah, okay. You meditate on that character, you pray to that character, you try to imbibe the life, mood and everything of that particular character as much as you can. Yes, take it a little further. Pardon? Well, if you can, maybe it depends who the character is, you know. I take permission from you, Hiranyakashipu, please bless me that I can play your... Be careful, there was one drama in Orissa one time where the actor was really a good actor. He played the role of Nrsingadev, and on the stage itself, he literally killed Hiranyakashipu. He ripped him to shreds on the stage. You know, so be careful how far you go there. Yeah, and asking for the blessings to play your role, you might end up in another drama. They actually stopped him acting after that, of course, after he killed Hiranyakashipu on the stage. And after many years, they didn't sentence him because he was completely unaware of what happened, and they believed that it was like a force beyond him. But they did retire him from acting. But he came back again. He made a comeback after maybe, I don't know, some years. So he wanted to come back. So they gave him a role in the Ramayana next time round. They didn't make him Ravana or Ram, that was for sure. They gave him the role of Dasharath. They thought we'd better give him a role which is a bit passive. So they gave him the role of Dasharath, but he died on the stage. He dropped dead on the stage when Ram left home. That was the end of his career in this life. He went straight back to Godhead, no doubt. But we don't imitate this type of elevated form of acting. Let's say there's a little bit other direction. We're going in the direction of positivity. Good. Let's look at the other side now. Okay, we'll give another example. Tightrope walker. Any of you are tight rope walkers? You have any tight rope walkers here? You know what they are? What's a tight rope walker? What's a tight rope walker? You know? You've been to the circus? They don't do that these days? You guys don't go to the circus anymore? You don't need to nowadays. The whole world's like a circus. Just have to walk down Watford High Street, you know, it's like a circus. What's a tight rope walker? They walk on a thin rope. That's not difficult. Just put it on the ground. You can roll on it and walk on it, whatever you want. Tell me more. It's high up in the air. The rope's high in the air. They walk on it. Pretty dangerous, huh? And they usually carry a pole, you know, to try to balance. So what's one of the secrets there? Two secrets. What's that? Focus. Focus on where they're going. I mean, it's Krishna conscious. Prabhupada uses this as an example of our Krishna consciousness. Do you have to have a goal? Without a goal, in Bhagavad Gita also Prabhupada explains it. All the problems of the world are due to want of an ultimate goal. We lose focus of our goal. You have to have the goal. But there's a little bit more to it than just a goal. What else does the tightrope walker have to do? Well, it's kind of simultaneously the same. So say the other side of it. Like you say, always remember Krishna, never forget him. If you're always remembering him, obviously you're not forgetting him. And if you're never forgetting him, you're obviously remembering him. You know, but say the other side. Balance? Yeah, it's all right, but that's not quite the other side of the coin. That's already said there, focus in the mind on the goal. Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, same thing in spiritual life. Make sure you don't, you know, put your foot away from the rope or whatever it is. Step into the bar instead of the temple or something. Never look down. That's interesting. What does that entail if you're looking down? You're losing focus. You're looking away from Krishna. You're looking at something else. You're looking at something else. So the same thing in drama. You know, if you're on the stage, and there's your brother, your sister, your mother, your uncle, your aunt, your son, everybody in the audience, oh, there they are. You don't think like that. Even your brother may be playing the other role. You're in the mood, kill him. You've got to get in the mood, true. And you've got to give up that identification with, you know, family and society. You can't start looking around to see who's there. You don't care a damn who's there. You know, it doesn't matter who's there. You've got your role to play, and you completely forget your normal role. Your normal role may be a nice, gentle, passive person, and now you're playing Hiranyakashipu in the drama. We usually find gentle people are the best demons, is a fact, in dramas. Have you seen that, Jai Krishna? That often the softest persons are very kind-hearted. When it comes to dramas, they are fierce. Sometimes they're building it up. You know, they're just waiting to let it out. It's a good way to let up your pent-up frustrations also sometimes. But you have to completely forget who you are. You are not the temple president. You are not the eternal associate of Krishna. Whatever it is, you are that part which you're playing. And that's how the material world works. Maya is the most expert dramatic director in existence. Even we don't consciously know it. She's completely covered us, so we've totally forgotten who we are. Completely. And she's given us, she's expert, trained us up so expertly to play the role as a dog or a goose. You've got lots of goose out there playing their role very well. Or a pig or a human in some position or another. Very, very thoroughly. Completely absorbed in their part. Identifying with it 100%. We had a wonderful Harinam last year on, what is it? Gay Pride Day? Was that what they called it? Was that day we went out last year on Harinam? during the Brahmachari convention, the grand finale, we took all the Brahmacharis out on Harinam to test their resolve. Just like Hiranyakashipu's resolve was tested very severely. I wanted to talk on the next verse, but anyway, we didn't get there. So Hiranyakashipu's resolve was severely tested at many stages. They were very austere. So the Brahmacharis, we threw them into the deep end and took them on Harinam, I think 70 or so, I don't sure how many. Many devotees, more than that, of course. And we experienced the gay pride in the center of London, right? Very nice. I mean, one chap, I was off the party a little bit there, and this guy has, I presume he was very gay. He seemed very jolly. And he had a kind of a rabbit bunny thing suit on, you know. And he was rather ugly looking, even from the best, whatever perception. Anyway, he had this rabbit suit on, and he was bouncing around there, you know, showing off. And he came up, and I said, "Why don't you come and join us?" or something. And I said, "Why don't you come and join us?" And anyway, it's like, and he, the way with me, I realized he wasn't a very ripe candidate for philosophical discussion at that point of time. So I left the other devotee there. I had something to do, and I overheard the other devotee, and he was saying, "But I am my body. This is me. Can't you see what's wrong with you?" You know, he was going on. "I am this body. This is me." You know, he was going on and on like this. You know, completely absorbed in the bodily platform of life. You know, and this is Maya. She's very good at training people to play their parts in the drama. You're not gay. You're not a man. You're not a woman. You're not Brahma, you're not this or that, Hiranyakashipu. We're none of these things. These are just roles which the soul plays, but because one has to be trained. One is trained, Maya trains us. Even in the hellish planets, you're trained to play that role very nicely as a dog or a tree or whatever it is. So you play it well. If you come on as a dog and you think, "What am I doing here? I'm not going to bark. I'm ridiculous. I don't want to bark. I want to meow." It won't work. You've got to bark, and when you see a cat, you have to jump at it. You've got to play your role properly, otherwise it won't work. The whole material world is based on this principle. Living end is identity, and then you can play it real well. I'm a businessman. I've got to, you know, go for it. I'm a politician. I've got to lie through my teeth and cheat as much as I can. Whatever they do, you know, you've got to play your role. That's how it works. So similarly, we sometimes find these great personalities, like Brahma, whatever, Hiranyakashipu, they're playing roles. And it unfolds as a drama, where you see sometimes a person who's your best friend playing a demoniac part, but they're playing the role well, and everyone's captured, captivated, and it's, and they're having a good time, like this. So even though one may be, let's say, a separate identity in one's normal life, when you're in the drama, you have to play your role. And when you come to realize that this is not my part, you can't play it anymore, really. And that's what's happening. When devotees realize that they're not the body, "Wait a minute, what am I doing here? This is ridiculous. This is nonsense. What's the use of this? This is completely illusion." Then you don't feel like doing it anymore. But however, to play the higher purpose, and this is devotional service, one still continues to perform one's duty, even it may appear to be like anyone else in the material world, but for Krishna's pleasure. As Krishna explains in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, how, even if you are in knowledge, still those in knowledge perform their duties for the sake of helping others to do what they're doing and learn how to do it properly for the service of Krishna. So we don't give up just because we realize, "Well, what's all this business about? I've got nothing to do with all this. What am I doing in this family life, doing business, this, that?" No, we do not. We show how to be a family person, how to be a businessman, whatever it is where our capacity allows, so that others may learn. They may learn how to do it in a way which will really benefit them, instead of entangling them further and further in the bodily concept of life. This is devotional, this is preaching. How to show others how to do it. Bhagavatam teaches how to do things, how not to do things, what to do if you do it wrongly, etc., etc. Everything's taught there by the devotees. Just like Prabhupada says, a mother teaches her daughter-in-law through her own daughter. Because the daughter-in-law inevitably will find it difficult to immediately accept the mother's direct instruction, her mother-in-law's direct instruction. But she learns by seeing another, the daughter herself, being chastised and corrected like this. So these great personalities sometimes take positions for our benefit. It's not just a story which we reenact as a drama. We have to understand the purpose behind it. It's not just a story which we become purified from, which is true. But there's a very deep, much deeper purpose there to understand the mentality of Hiranyakashipu and Brahma and others and the demigods, etc. And see how this is relevant to us and take the appropriate steps to utilize this, good fortune of their association in this way. So we may become cured of those tendencies. Although if they're positive, we may cultivate those tendencies. And if they're negative, we may become cured of them. By hearing this past tense, we can become cured of the mentality of Hiranyakashipu, or the mentality of fear of the demigods, or whatever, or sometimes the pride of Brahma. Like this, we may become cured. They do. This is how it works. Sometimes we experience these things. Okay, well, there's a lot more we wanted to develop along this line, but time has expired. In this world, time and tide wait for no man. So I guess it's time's up. And if there are any questions or comments, please share them.